KPCW News. Time is now 8:06. You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Roger Goldman. Let's find out what we've got in store for our weather today and for the weekend. Here with a report, we have Cedric Haynes with the ABC4 Weather Center.
Happy Friday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch. Back on this Friday, we've got plenty of sunshine after another chilly start out there this morning. We're going to see our temperatures warming up about 10 degrees from where we were yesterday afternoon. So expecting high temperatures to climb into the upper 70s in the Park City area. We should see those high temperatures climbing into the mid 80s. In the Heber Valley. As we make our way into the weekend, Saturday will feature highs around 80 degrees in Park City with lots of sunshine. We'll see those highs in the mid to upper 80s for us in the Heber Valley with lots of sunshine. A similar repeat for our story as we go into your Sunday, lots of sunshine. Temperatures climbing to near 80 degrees in Park City on Sunday. We'll see those highs in the mid to upper 80s in the Heber Valley. We will see a chance of some increasing winds as we go throughout the weekend, so watch out for that elevated fire danger threat going into the weekend here with those gusty winds and, of course, dry fuel sources that we have out there. Absolutely no outside burning during this time. As we go into the forecast for next week, well, we're going to stick with more high pressure across the area, but that high pressure ridge is going to get stronger. So your Monday, we'll see high temperatures climbing to around the low 80s for us. As we go into the Park City area, we'll see those highs around 90 in the Heber Valley, and we see those high temperatures in the low 90s as we get towards the middle of next week here in the Heber Valley, with high temperatures in the low to mid 80s as we get you over towards Park City. Again, during this entire time, high pressure will be controlling our weather, so the chance of any real rainfall will be slim to none. This weekend, there is a less than 10% chance of potentially seeing a dry thunderstorm or two, with some lightning and gusty winds being the primary threat, not so much heavy rainfall. But that chance, again, is less than 10%. So I would not necessarily worry too much about it, but just keep an eye to the sky just in case. Otherwise, have a great weekend. It's going to feel like summer across the area. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Coming up, we're going to get the buzz on this year's mosquito season from Bren Staples of the Summit Mosquito Abatement District. Then Park City Councilmember Bill Sirocco will stop by with a debrief from last night's City Council meeting. We're going to finish our hour by speaking with Park City Toastmasters members Karen Stone and Candy Kutkus about their upcoming three-month speaker programs. Let's do a little local news. Subpar snowfall continues to hurt Vail's revenue 1 year after Rob Katz returned as CEO, with the charge to fix falling stock prices. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports he has repeatedly taken a long-range view.
According to Vail Resorts CEO Rob Katz, all Rocky Mountain ski resorts saw 24% less visitation during the 2025-26 winter compared to the year prior. He mentioned the industry-wide data on Vail's third-quarter earnings call Monday. Katz points to the record low snow year in the Rockies region, which in the ski industry includes Utah and Vail-owned Park City Mountain.
When you look back over 40 years, the prior worst decline in visitation outside of COVID-related closures for the Rockies was down 8% in 2012, which illustrates the unprecedented severity of the conditions and the anomaly we just experienced.
He thinks the weather is also driving a 10% decrease in early Epic Pass sales year over year this spring. But weather-related hits to Vail's bottom line haven't stopped its chief executive from taking a long-term view. Katz believes skiers may simply be delaying their decision to buy a season pass.
Looking back over the past several decades, U.S. ski market data indicates that visitation typically fully recovers following a season with poor conditions if the subsequent season has normal conditions.
Vail stock prices rose steadily with the advent of the Epic Pass and resort acquisitions under Katz's first tenure as CEO, but they have been falling from their November 2021 peak. Katz resumed the CEO role in May 2025, midway through former CEO Kirsten Lynch's two-year resource efficiency effort, which has included layoffs. Park City Mountain laid off some staff earlier this year, but could not provide a number in time for this report. Vail said in 2024, the efficiency effort as a whole was to include reducing its corporate workforce by 14%. While the company is leaner in terms of personnel, Vail has not trimmed its assets, as Park City billionaire Matthew Prince has continually and publicly urged it to do. Vail has instead been focused on buying back stock shares to increase their value. Prince gave the Colorado Sun an interview published days before the Monday earnings call in which he says Vail's future is, quote, asset light. The Old Town resident wants to buy Park City Mountain, which Vail has said is not for sale. Katz indicated that owning resorts has its advantages. Being asset heavy may provide Vail considerable upside next season since it cut season pass prices for younger skiers by 20%. CFO Angela Korch hinted that the discount has been successful despite the drop in pass sales, but Katz declined to give specific numbers.
To the extent that we're being more aggressive with young adult, no matter where they ski, largely in our North American network, we're getting the benefit of that lift, full 100% of lift revenue. Plus, we're also getting the benefit of everything they spend on the mountain. So, I can see how that makes it a little bit trickier if you don't have that set up.
Vail's primary competitor and the owner of Deer Valley, Alterra Mountain Company, owns fewer ski areas but provides access to other resorts on its Icon Pass. Alterra is privately owned and therefore does not have public earnings calls. Vail Resorts Epic Promise Foundation is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the Park City Elks Lodge will mark the National Flag Day holiday Sunday with a ceremony honoring the history of the American flag. Elks member Lisa Schneider says the free event at the Park City Senior Center is open to everyone.
So you'll have a chance to actually see replicas of 8 American flags from between 1775 to present, including our nation's first flag. The 9th flag is the POW-MIA flag. That process gives everybody a chance to learn about the history of these flags.
There will also be a free lunch and live music. The Park City Elks Lodge was chartered in 1922, but actually first organized in the 1800s. That group helped start the Glenwood Cemetery. Elks member Craig Cooper says the national organization was also instrumental in designating Flag Day as a national holiday.
Started as a tradition with Elks well before it became a national holiday. Woodrow Wilson, I think, was an Elk, and we encouraged him to designate it as a national holiday.
President Harry Truman signed the declaration, establishing June 14th as Flag Day in 1949. Even if we've all tried to forget the lack of snow this ski season, the lack of a snowpack is hard to miss if you simply look at the levels of the Jordan Elk. Here to talk about the impact of our dry year on mosquitoes is Brent Staples of the Summit Mosquito Abatement District. Morning, Brent. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Much better. Thank you very much. Before we get to sort of what we can expect this season, can you share a little bit about what the Mosquito Abatement District does?
Yeah, you know, our goal is to go throughout the county and protect you people from the mosquitoes. Our goal is to knock down those nuisance mosquitoes, but also those ones that could carry diseases. Mosquitoes are a very deadly animal, as we've all learned throughout the world, and so we keep you safe from those diseases.
And how big is your organization? How many people, and what do they do?
So we have about 20 employees that are generally seasonal. We start in April and to late May, and we go till September, and our goal is to go around the entire county. We have different areas assigned out, and they go around their area once a week and make sure they check all the swamps for mosquito larvae.
And that's what they're looking for. I assume they're looking for standing water.
Yeah, that's their goal. They're looking for standing water to, that's where the larvae breed, and it's the easiest place to kill the mosquitoes.
And what kind of technology do you use to sort of know where the water is? I mean, do we have, like, drone maps? What do you do to find the stuff?
Yeah, we have a variety. We have a GIS mapping system that we've had our employees out on the prowl for years and years that we've mapped and have a good system there for that. A lot of other districts do use drone mapping. We haven't got there yet. Potentially that's a thing we'll get to in the future. But we rely heavily on community to let us know where the water is.
Now realistically, you're never going to make them all go away. What's a realistic goal? What are you trying to accomplish?
You know, our goal is to keep them as minimal as possible. Right. So you're right. We're never going to kill all the mosquitoes. They can lay dormant for hundreds of years in the soil. And so our goal is just keep them in a manageable level for you guys and make sure there's no problems.
And what's the typical mosquito season here in our area?
Generally, we start seeing mosquitoes, in the air flying, May. May to October is kind of our main season. So, yeah.
Okay. So we start to see them in May. How much does the population vary from year to year, and what drives those population differences?
Yeah, the population is very driven by the amount of water. This year, we're shy on water.
That's putting it mildly.
Yeah, we're very shy on water. And so we suspect that there's going to be a very lower number of mosquitoes. However, mosquitoes are going to find any water there is. And so we think that there's going to be maybe a potential for more disease-carrying mosquitoes, because those type of mosquitoes like warmer water, and where there's water is going to be shallower, we have a potential for that.
So we have good news and bad news. We may have fewer of them, but the ones we have may well be nastier.
Exactly, yeah, may carry more disease.
Okay, so how much, we all know the water level's low, and that the mosquitoes tend to nest in these swamp sort of standing water things, areas. How much lower are those waters this year?
The waters are extremely low.
Right.
There's places we normally walk all summer long and treat that even starting in May we didn't even need to go to because there was just absolutely no water. So,
and how do you treat them?
Yeah, so we put a product in the water. It's a really cool product. It's called Vectobac, or Bacillus thuringiensis azurensis. And it's a corn cob granule, but that active ingredient is a crystal from a bacteria that's naturally found in Israel. And so we put that into the water. It gets in the water, and the mosquitoes eat that little crystal, and it kind of eats them from the inside out. And it's pretty cool because it's pretty targeted specifically to mosquitoes. They haven't found much else that it affects. So,
wow, it sounds like kind of like a James Bond zombie product, right? That it just targets the mosquito and makes it, you know, sort of explode. How long have you been able to use that?
They've been using it for as long as I can remember. I don't know exactly what year they started using it, but it's been around for a long time.
It's pretty powerful. What other techniques do you use?
You know, there's also, we generally stick with those type of products. Occasionally we have to put a fog out in the area for our adults, but we usually try to focus on our larvae with that product. I mean, there's a few other products that are similar, but all of it very, very natural. So,
and do you ever like actually bring in other resources to actually try to drain or otherwise sort of permanently eliminate standing water?
Yeah. So often we do source reduction.
Right.
We usually do it manpower. One of our big problems is beaver dams.
And I was going to ask you about beaver dams.
And, you know, they're nice, and beavers knew it was going to be a dry this year. They did a really good job at making sure the water stayed in. And so occasionally we'll drain them a little bit so they're out of the mosquito beds, but we know water's good too, so we don't want to take it all away.
That's really interesting. You actually saw a pattern where the where the beavers could sense that things were gonna happen, and then they build more dams as a result?
Yeah, this year's been very interesting to go along, especially here in the Park City area. There's a whole lot more beaver dams, and they've been bigger, and I think it's all due to the fact that they knew there was going to be a drier year.
Now I realize we're kind of off topic here, but I can't help but ask you, if people actually want to see the beaver dams, where are they likely to be able to find them?
In the canyon there by the high school. On the rail trail there, there's a lot of beaver dams there. That's a really good spot.
And do you knock those down? What do you have to do?
Occasionally we'll pull one out, but we also work with DWR and other resources to make sure the beavers are in check.
Now, talk to us a little bit about what you would like to see our listeners do to sort of help the efforts that you have. I mean, I know that it's a big effort. You got 20 people, but, you know, obviously people can address standing water on their property.
Yeah, definitely. Our goal for you all is to make sure that if you find standing water in your backyard, because it's going to be there, you all are probably turning on your sprinklers, and it's going to fill up your containers. One of the most common things that you hear about is tires, you know, empty your tires. But flower pots are very big for holding water that you don't think so underneath, and bottle caps and things. So if you see standing water, you know, our best thing is for you to just empty it once a week. But also, you know, if you have an issue, please call us. Let's get in contact. So that's kind of my goal for you all, is to let us know, and let's work together to make sure there's less mosquitoes.
Yeah, Brands, we talked earlier today, you sort of mentioned something to the effect of they can stay in the ground for years. Let's talk a little bit about mosquito life cycles, because I know it was almost 5 minutes ago, but it just registered to me, say what? They can live in the ground for years? Talk to us about life cycles.
Yeah, so the life cycle of a mosquito is egg, larva, pupae, and then adult. and the female mosquitoes take a blood meal, and then they lay eggs in moist, damp water or soil, and then those eggs hit the water and they hatch, and the cycle repeats itself. So eggs can lay dormant for a while. Some mosquitoes lay a single egg, some lay egg rafts of up to 100 larvae. So,
and you said they can lay dormant. How long can they lay dormant for?
It's my understanding they can lay up to 100 years, just dormant in the soil. So, yeah, it's a never-ending battle.
So what would stimulate them? This is really interesting. What would stimulate them to come back to life if they can lay dormant that long? Is it water?
It's water.
Okay,
they're
sitting in the ground, and if they get wet, it's like magic, right? They might come back to life. And then do they burst out of the soil?
They're just in the soil, and so, yeah, they're going to just
burrow their way out. Okay. All right, so you've mentioned that listeners can try to minimize the standing water. How can they learn more, and where can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, 100%. You can always call us at 435-336-2088, or you can go to our website at summitmosquito.org. And then also we've started an Instagram page this year that's Summit Mad that you can follow, and there should be great information and tips there for mosquito control.
Okay. Anything else you want to touch on before we go?
I don't think so. Just keep wearing your mosquito repellent and stay safe.
All right. Brent Staples of the Summit Mosquito Abatement District. Thanks for coming back and joining me, Brent.
Thank you, Roger.
Oakley has approved designs for an entirely new city center. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the city will now hammer out a contract with local businessmen with plans to develop it.
The Oakley City Council voted Wednesday in favor of a site plan that could bring the town new stores, office space, and restaurants. Local businessman Steve Smith's plan also promises an expanded post office, Ken's Cash Market, and a hardware store at the east end of Center Street. He can't break ground just yet, says Mayor Steve Wilmoth.
Keep in mind, next step, development agreement, we'll start working on that. I know a lot of that has already started to some extent. The two attorneys have been going back and forth, and we're working down through some of that. So, right. There will be two more public hearings on it.
The layout for the proposed city center development has evolved substantially from its first iteration in 2023. Originally, Smith envisioned a master plan development to include land on both sides of State Route 32, from Weber Canyon Road down to the post office across Center Street. By the end of last year, city officials had made it clear they only wanted their development agreement with Smith to include land north of Center Street. Councilmember Tom Smart predicts the end result will be, quote, spectacular.
And I just want to thank you, Steve, and the Planning Commission, everything. I know it's been a tough 3 years, but I think that this is something that we could really be proud of.
Smith says he and his development team have abandoned plans that they had for any land west of Route 32, including a steakhouse in the old barn on Millrace Road. But as Deer Meadows Enterprises still owns the old Brooklawn Creamery on the east side of Route 32 at Cow Alley. That will be the steakhouse.
I'm sorry, we're going to have a steakhouse in Oakley, and it's going to be nicer than anything you can find in Park City. That's a request.
That's not hard.
Well, I'm telling you.
Smith says the creamery will join the Oakley Diner on the National Park Service's Register of Historic Places, as he wants to, quote, tip the hat to that history. But the steakhouse is a separate project and won't be part of the development agreement with Oakley City. The city-approved site plan is available at kpcw.org. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the Park City Council held a regular meeting last night. Maybe a little more than a regular meeting. But here with a debrief is Bill Sirocco. Once again, KPCW Municipal is a KPCW financial supporting morning, Bill.
Oh, ow.
You're trying to follow up on the mosquito guy.
Yes.
Huh?
Good morning, Roger. How are you?
Well, we're going to get the buzz from last night's meeting now.
Fantastic.
Okay. Before we get to last night's meeting, though, I wanted to ask you about your take from City Tour. What'd you learn?
What we learned from City Tour? Well, you know, it's always good to get out and see other places that are sort of in the same space as you and see how people do things. Maybe they do things a little bit differently. Maybe they have a little different attitude or framework of how they operate. So, and it's always good because when you come back into Park City, you're looking at Park City with eyes that have been freshened a little bit. So, we spent 2 days in Vail, 2 days in Breckenridge. The first thing I learned is that it's incredibly difficult to sleep at 9,750 feet of elevation in Breckenridge. So I came home feeling like I had a hangover. But no, they Breckenridge has got the town of Breckenridge has an area on the entryway into town where they've been able to kind of create a community that's populated with a lot of middle class and working class housing and some amenities that service those places. So it's I think the class really when we toured out there and they've got their. Their food bank and a thrift store out there as well. And it really felt like a great community hub and a place where people that were living and working in Breckenridge could feel like they had their own place in the community. And I think that was one of the eye-opening things. The other eye-opening thing was when we toured a housing development in Breckenridge that was one of the first sort of deed restricted or subsidized housing developments, people looked at it and were like, wow, we need this in Park City. And really what they were responding to was the fact that it's been there for about 25 years. So it feels lived in, it feels mature. Mm-hmm. And you know, my comment was like, yeah, that's great. And we have something like that in Park City. It's called Park City Heights. And give that another 15 years and it's gonna feel just like this.
And were they, with the Breckenridge model, again, and we've talked about this, the council's talked about this, everybody in town's talked about it. Is there, do you see that as sort of the, something like the catch basin model that we're looking for in terms of it's where you have community housing, but is it also, they also have a way to sort of encourage public transportation into town? Do they have parking structures out there as well?
Yeah, so just between where that area was and the beginning of town is where Breckenridge has a large parking structure, sort of on the main entry road. And with a gondola, actually, it takes people from that location up to the slopes at Breckenridge. So there's something to be learned from that about how well that's worked for them. Now, you know, I personally would not want to have the parking structure on the main entryway into town, you know, just because of the traffic impact and the visual. But you know, Breckenridge, that was the only option they had. We may have more options than that here in Park City. So, that was great. And, I think, you know, one of the things that I heard from a bunch of the class, and there were a number of folks who were, you know, kind of focused on sort of the affordable housing, workforce housing, question was Breckenridge's ability to create a sense of community. And some of the feedback we heard both from Town of Breckenridge officials and Town of Vail officials were workforce has not really, I don't want to say resisted, but they're not really jazzed about having an affordable unit amongst a bunch of not affordable units where half of those other units may be seasonal or part-time. They don't feel a sense of community. It was relayed to us that when they've been able to build a sort of, you know, something at scale that reflects more of a community feeling, that's way more in demand, that's what people want. They want someplace that they can shop, that they can have, you know, neighbors who are in a similar situation, may have kids, and, you know, then you start building community, and I think that's what resonates with people.
That's really interesting. What about Vail?
Well, that was the same for Vail. The same. And Vail is it's even more stark in Vail, right? Vail didn't exist until the ski resort existed, whereas Breckenridge is like Park City. It was an old mining town, right? So Vail was a purpose-built ski resort village. So if you live in Vail Village now, you know, especially in the off-season, it can feel quite quiet, right? So workforce really wasn't so enamored with the thought of having, you know, 20% of the units in a condo building in Vail Village workforce affordable because there was no community there for them. Right. So I think there's a lesson for us to learn in that. You know, we've done well on the number of units we've been able to kind of put in process over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. I think we need to be more purposeful and have a little more intent about building community.
And at the end of this interview, I want to get back to sort of what the possible things we could do here along some of the lines you've just been talking about. But we have something to talk about from last night's meeting. Before we get to compensation, which I think was probably the headline, talk to us a little bit about the new Planning Commission appointees that the council named last night.
Sure. So we had two open seats on the Planning Commission, and we held interviews last week. We had a tremendously deep, talented pool of applicants, which actually made the selection hard. Two of the applicants were sitting planning commissioners. One of them, John Frontero, was reappointed for another term. And then Matthew Day, who had served on the city's appeals panel that we stood up about 2.5 years ago and have since disbanded because of state law. But Matthew did a great job on the appeals panel, and he crushed the interview. Mm-hmm. And it was very easy to for me, at least, to advocate for Matthew. And there was consensus among the group that Matthew should be the one that got that second appointment. And I feel really good about the makeup of our planning commission right now. Nothing that comes before them is easy.
No.
You know, whether it's a lift upgrade, whether it's the 5-acre parcel, you know. So, I feel for those. I have some empathy for them, for what they have to go through. But I feel that we've got a really capable planning commission at this point in time.
Before we go on, I've got a note here that we have an accident to talk about. Southbound 224 at the Holiday Ranch Loop, all southbound lanes are blocked. Traffic is passing on the shoulder. Sounds like a mess. Should be major delays. But if you're in your car, it gives you time to listen to us as we continue with this interview, talking to Bill Scirocco about last night's city council meeting.
With that news, Roger, it actually makes me glad that I got up early and ran down to Chomp Donuts down in Kimball Junction and brought a half a dozen donuts into the station here. So if your staff has a sugar high, I'm the one to blame.
Well, I hope I get one of those eventually. Okay, let's talk about compensation. For those who have not been following it, last night the proposed increase in compensation for council and the mayor came up. Let's talk about how we got here. How did that get onto the agenda last month? How did it first come up?
I first became aware of it for the May 7th meeting when I was doing homework a day or two before the meeting. There was a budget preview in the meeting packet. And, you know, when you have a budget preview and there's, you know, tens or hundreds of line items, typically the way you start that review is you go to the change column and you look at what's changed, right? So as I scanned that document, there were a lot of zeros, a lot of no changes. There were a handful of small negative numbers. And then there was a plus 53% number. And I was taken aback at first. And I scanned to the left on the sheet and saw that it was attached to the council compensation and benefits. And, you know, looking at it quickly, it just registered as compensation to me. And I thought, you know, 53% raise in our compensation was probably a bit high. You know, the city manager, new city manager, Adam Lenhard, who just started basically on April 1st, you know, kudos to Adam. He made sure that council members were aware of this change. So he called me the day before the meeting just to make sure I was aware. You know, we had a brief conversation. I said, you know, look, I don't begrudge, you know, folks wanting a raise. I just think that's a bit much. I can't support that, but I'll support 10%. And then, you know, the conversation went from there.
So how did it get into that budget? Did it come from staff organically? Did it come from some other impetus? How did it get there? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't know how it got there, Roger.
Okay.
I wasn't asked if I wanted staff to do work. And, you know, clearly staff had done some work because it was in the budget preview.
Right.
And then 2 weeks later, you know, we had a staff report for the May 21st meeting, you know, where the salary, the increase in our actual salary or wages, if you will, was actually 100% because, you know, if you divide it only by our compensation, the salary number, it's 1/1. If you include the health care benefit in the denominator, it's 1/2.
So
that's what made it look like 53%.
So let's talk about it. So it came up before the council, I guess, 2 weeks ago, and it was approved, as I understand it, by a 4-1 vote?
That is correct. That mm-hmm. is correct.
Okay. What happened since then?
You know, look.
Other than many letters to the editor and the park record,
Look, I want to say I'm really proud of our community. Our community is super engaged. We've got a super intelligent, super accomplished community. And when they show up, they show up. And they did over the past 3 weeks. to voice some concerns with, you know, and I think a lot of it had to do with the process, which once again, you know, I can't really speak to the process because I don't know how, what the, I don't know how it got in there, you know, which, you know, maybe doesn't reflect well on me. And I, you know, I pledge to do better and be more vigilant on those sorts of things. But the community spoke and, you know, people had issue with the magnitude and the timing. There was a number of folks that felt that, you know, that this should have been an issue in the last election so that the public could have weighed in. You know, I'm okay. Look, it's very uncomfortable to have to opine or vote on your own raise when you're in a public serving role. In the private sector, no, absolutely advocate for yourself and make sure you get paid. In the public sector, it feels a bit icky. You know,
Well, the difference in the private sector is you're probably asking someone else.
Yeah.
Here you're talking to yourself.
True. You're asking someone else. Right. And more times than not, there are some actual, like, financial metrics that you can point to, P&L, you know, account growth, whatever, those sorts of things, sales numbers, right? So that private sector conversation is easier. I just wasn't comfortable voting on the raise for ourselves now. So if there was something, and I wasn't like a stick in the mud, I said, look, I'll support a 10% increase, which I think most people, if they looked and got a 10% increase, they'd be, you know, pretty happy with that. So,
and that's why you voted against the original proposal 3 weeks ago.
Correct, because it was far beyond 10%.
Okay, so what did you hear last night from the public before we get to the discussion within council?
Yeah, well, it was interesting. You know, there were numerous letters to the editor in the Park Record over the last 3 weeks, and you know, I would say, by a measure of, you know, probably 4 or 5 to 1, they were not happy with, you know, what the result of the vote was on May 21st. You know, last night those people were not in the room.
Well, that's interesting.
That doesn't mean that, like, now I can dismiss their opinions. Like, I'm still trying to take the temperature of the whole community, right? So there were some folks in there that were supportive of pay raises. You know, there are a lot of entities, a lot of folks in town who have good relationships with the city, which is great. We should look to make sure that we have great relationships, not just, you know, with every constituent, with every resident, with every member of the workforce, with every nonprofit. You know, and some of those folks came in and spoke about supporting the pay raise. And there was a, you know, a former counselor, the wife of a former counselor, came in and gave public comment for the first time in a long, long time, and, you know, supported the pay raise, and, you know, said that, you know, her spouse, you know, could not continue in the role on council because of the economics. And look, I get it. It's difficult for people. You know, this is service, and service involves sacrifice.
And I guess that was the argument that you heard in favor of it, was that the increase in pay as proposed several weeks ago would facilitate a wider potential participants, that people who could otherwise not afford to give up that much of their lives could serve.
That was
the argument.
That was one of the arguments, mm-hmm. You know, which on the face makes sense. But the first question is, do we have that problem? Are we not getting a plethora of candidates that are across a wide swath of the community? And I would argue, yes, we have. I would argue that the folks that have been elected to council over the last 10, 15, 20 years have all, you know, done a good job and represented varied interests here in the community. And then, you know, if the goal really is to open up council service to more people, paying them an extra $10,000 really is not going to make that happen when you have council and mayor races where people are raising $40,000 or $50,000 to run for office. So if we really want to do that, we need to start talking about campaign financing and how we fund campaigns. And I'm not sure that's really what we want to get into at the city level.
I was going to say, can the city even do that?
I don't think we can.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
I don't think we can. So, yeah. I just don't want to put my fingers on the scale.
So let's talk about the conversation within the council, because my understanding is that it went on for a while in terms of you guys talking to each other.
It did. It's a delicate and sensitive issue to have to sort of not debate, but discuss that in a public forum like that. But, you know, that we're the council and that has to happen in a public forum. The public needs to know what we're doing, especially on how we compensate ourselves. But look, you know, there were differing opinions. My opinion was different than, you know, three of my council members. But I told them last night, I said, look, this is a majority rules government. If three people vote yes and two people vote no, and I'm one of the no's, like, once we're done, I'm done. I'm moving on. I'm not holding any grudge. I don't have any displeasure or disfavor for any of my colleagues. Everything we do is hard. People are very emotional about it. You know, I after we broke from that, I went to the men's room and, you know, was confronted in the hallway, you know, by someone who was in favor of the raises. People are super charged up lately, and we need to turn the temperature down a little bit.
But my understanding is that a compromise was reached. I mean, what the council's looking at is not the original numbers.
Correct. Well, you know, so look, we actually kind of realized if we had not made any decision last night, we had already passed an ordinance that included 100% pay raise. So if we did nothing, that would go into effect. So, you know, I think I made the joke, like, maybe we should think about policymaking more like this. Like, let's throw the grenade into the room and make us make a decision more quickly, right? So, look, we were under pressure to do something because I don't think status quo letting that 100% pay raise, I don't think that would have been, look, it did divide the community. It did tear us apart a little bit. That's unfortunate, you know, but council did a good job last night to try to rein it in. I think we landed at about a 20% increase. I wasn't going to support that magnitude. You know, I said I'd support 10%, and then I included a rounding error because, you know, Ed was backing into some Ed math based on CPI, and I wanted to leave room to, you know, kind of fall where he did if it was a few extra $100. And it ended up being that, and, you know, so Ed and I were kind of on agreement, like $31,800, something like that, which would have been about a 11-12% raise. I didn't want it to take effect until after the next election because I feel the public should opine about how they feel about this. Our voters, our constituents.
So was it a 3-2 final vote?
Yeah, it was a 3-2 final vote.
And what was the final number that the three came up with? Approximately 35?
Yeah, almost 35,000. I think okay. Between 34,500 and 35,000.
And that'll get finalized next week?
Yeah, that'll when we approve the final budget, that'll be finalized.
Okay, we could probably have a longer discussion about the philosophy of public service and how you balance these things, but I want to touch on something else while I've got you here, which is we started by talking about Vail and Breckenridge and the way they have created what I would call satellite communities to sort of service things. You know, when you were running and numerous times in the past, we've talked about, you know, what can we do here from a big picture perspective? And, you know, I know you've got some views. You've talked about aerial transit. Where do things stand and how do you think, how are you moving on any of the sort of big picture, what I would call, for lack of a better term, catch basin concepts?
Fantastic. So quickly, I'm just going to close out that last subject, Roger.
I'm sorry.
No. So, you know, the talk was how do we value service? How do we value our council people that serve the community? And last night as we were talking and I was listening to public feedback, it occurred to me that, you know, whatever the pay is, like, but the people in this community do value this. Our constituents have nothing more valuable than their vote. And in order to sit in those seats, you need to get their votes. So to me, I view that the community really values the service we give. You know, on to that next question about how do we think about the future and how do we create a place that really works better for our community? You know, the town of Hideout, which has 300 acres and change over in Richardson Flat, they've got a planning application for a development called Silver Meadows, I believe it is. That's the Larry H. Miller Corp. who owns that land. They also own roughly close to 600 acres over on the Park City side of Richardson Flat, immediately adjacent to where this development will happen. And they're moving forward with a project that looks like, you know, something that looks like community. I think that at the end of the day, you know, after several years, there'll be up to 600 units of housing. I believe 120 of those are going to be a range of affordable housing in different forms. You know, maybe some small single family, some townhome, and maybe some condos. There's 100,000 square feet of commercial, which, just to put it in perspective, I know that sounds like a big number. Your average supermarket is about 70,000 square feet, so there's not much left if you put a supermarket in. There's not much left after that. But it looks like a place that people will want to live. It looks like it can become a really solid middle-class community the way Park City Heights has, but with amenities that make living, you know, a little bit easier and a little less car-focused.
But where do we go from here?
I don't know. We'll have to see. I imagine as they get started on that project, which literally is within 200 feet of our park and ride in Richardson Flat, I imagine, you know, they'll reach out to us. They have in the past. You know, hopefully there's a conversation and we can talk about a future that involves things that are great for the community, that involve, you know, some dedicated open space on some land, maybe a conservation easement, some recreation facilities, and then, you know, some space for a livable, workable community for people.
A conversation that we will undoubtedly continue. Bill Scirocco from the Park City Council, thanks for joining me this morning. Once again, Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. They also brought us donuts. We'll be right back after this.
Thank you, Roger.
Karen Stone and Candy Kutkus, have I pronounced that correctly?
Yes.
Are here in the studio with me to talk about Toastmasters. Good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Before we get to what you guys have got cooked up, which I understand is an interesting set of programs, tell us a little bit about Toastmasters. I expect you guys to be extremely articulate, witty, and entertaining because that's what Toastmasters is all about.
So Toastmasters is really a dual-track development system with a Pathways education program, which builds communication skill through structured speech projects. And we also offer a leadership track. So club officers and district leadership roles, which we both hold, create a parallel ladder for developing real organizational management competency. So
if I were fortunate enough to be invited to come to a Toastmasters meeting, what would it be like?
So you would see the same thing anywhere you are in the world. So we have generally three speakers who give polished speeches. Then we break into our table topics portion, which is our improv session, where people are given questions and they just have to answer the questions kind of impromptu. And then all of the speakers get evaluated, so they get formal evaluations.
Oh, that sounds brutal. I mean, I know when I do this show, I fortunately do not get an email immediately afterwards grading me. So, but it's positive feedback, I assume, so that you can learn what you're doing.
Well, it's constructive.
Constructive. Not positive, but constructive.
Well it's
sometimes it's positive.
It's definitely positive, but hopefully you're also learning something to improve for the next time you're speaking.
So for people who are listening to this and are trying to, like, get down a level, if I went to the last meeting, do you remember what some of the topics of the speakers were, just off the top of your head? Or when was the last, let me ask a more direct question, the last time you had to do this, what did you talk about?
The last time I gave a speech?
Yes, ma'am. What did you
talk about? Gave a fun speech. It was a story. It was a story about my first vacation and my first kiss. So I was 16, and so it was just about a trip that I took when I was in high school to Canada to be in a parade, mm-hmm. the Calgary Stampede. Did you want to hear the story?
Absolutely. I want the 30 seconds or
something. Well, basically, I went to Canada for the Calgary Stampede. I was a flag girl, and we met some Canadians, and of course, you know, we were in high school, and they took us to a house party, and I met a guy, got my first real French kiss, and so that's about it.
Boy, if I'd known there were stories like that, I'd come to more Toastmasters meetings. But I take it can range from something like that, which is about, I take it, structure, pace, all the elements of good communication, right? That's what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah,
right?
So we get evaluated on our stage presence, our vocal variety, our eye contact, our tone, and that is part of the educational program too. So as members come in, they're not just coached or trained on what to talk about, it's how do you deliver the message.
Okay, and Since we're on this topic and I'm having fun, what was your last speech about?
Oh, I give so many speeches.
You can pick one.
Sure. I speak a lot about comedy. I do stand-up comedy and the fear of doing something like that and how it relates to life. I'm also a realtor, so I shared a story about like the three things I love about real estate from a comedy standpoint, right? So like it's like a parody. And I also recently led an improv workshop with our Toastmasters Club so that they could work on, you know, being more flexible.
Okay, those are two concepts that I really hadn't put together before, which is real estate and stand-up comedy.
They actually go hand in hand.
Well, I mean, I know there are challenges in both. Yes. So you have an upcoming program. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, so we were fortunate enough, I was fortunate enough to meet John Bates.
Who is quite a character.
Quite a character. And when I met him through a mentor, I said, I can't gatekeep this. I have to expose him to the club. And so we had him come several months ago, and he led a workshop on the origin story. What is the story that you have to share that was that fork in the road that you can share on stage that will connect with the audience, that will get them to buy in? Why are you here? Why should they listen? And so we've reestablished a relationship with him, and we are basically hiring him to coach our members as they build speeches to deliver these really polished speeches. Think like a TEDx kind of event. Mm-hmm. Through a 3-month training program, and that event will be, we're doing like the kickoff in June 23rd, and the actual event in late October.
So how will that work? How will your members be able to have access to John?
Well, he's coming next week, right, to give a little demonstration with everybody, and there's going to be whoever's interested will sign up and work with him for 3 months on coaching. So they'll come up with a speech and work with him on perfecting that speech, and then in October, we'll be giving the speech to a crowd of people.
And how many of your members will be able to participate in this program?
Probably up to 12.
Wow.
Yeah, anywhere from about 4 minutes to 12 minutes, a variety of topics. Again, like all of our members, and this is only open to members.
Only open members.
Yes, and our members, in order to qualify, they have to reach a certain level from the education standpoint, so we want them to participate in the Toastmasters curriculum as well. But he's really going to help people like me. Like, I don't know what I want to talk about, right? I'm very good on stage.
You're very good on stage.
we're all very diversified, but for some of our members, like, they want to become professional speakers, and we're going to be giving them that platform to do it. We're inviting the community to share in this experience, and all of the participants will get a video that they can put on their website, that they can send out to event planners to potentially get on other stages that maybe they wouldn't have had.
So this is kind of a remarkable opportunity. And so it sort of tells you something about the way in which membership in Toastmasters can lead to sort of not just merely getting feedback from the people in the room, but to broader educational opportunities.
Right. And we've also had some people that have already done a TEDx talk.
Mm-hmm.
We have people that already do coaching, professional coaching with people out in the community. So with some people are already doing this, but it's always good to continue on to improve.
Okay, before we go, let's tell everybody where Toastmasters meets and how they can learn further things and how they can find out about joining.
So they can go to our website, parkcitytoastmasters.com, I believe it is. We should know that.
Yes, you should.
our next, if you just Google us, we're very Google.
You're very visible.
June 23rd at the public library, at the Park City Library here, is when John Bates will be there. But we invite anybody to come any Tuesday. We meet every week on Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. Every week at the library, except for the second week, Tuesday of the month, we'll meet at Kiln.
Okay.
And they can register on our website. They can reach out to any one of our members. They can come. They don't have to participate. They don't have to speak. A lot of them think they're going to be put on the spot to actually speak. We don't generally call on them other than to introduce themselves and to maybe give a little bit of feedback.
Okay, Karen Stone and Candy Cutkus of the Toastmasters, thanks for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having us.
We'll be right back after this. South Summit school district leaders and teachers will get a raise in fiscal 2027. Christine Weller reports They will get the superintendent and business administrator will also stay on for another 2 years.
The South Summit School District Board of Education approved a 4% salary increase for all of its teachers and staff during a meeting June 8th. In a letter to employees, the district said the raise is a cost of living adjustment meant to support staff while remaining financially responsible long term. The district reports it will also absorb the 8% increase in health insurance costs and half of the 3% increase in dental insurance premiums. Employees already pay half the cost. However, the district said employees may not receive holiday bonuses like in previous years. The letter says bonuses have always, quote, been one-time recognition tied to available funding and were never intended to become part of a guaranteed annual compensation package. The board and district may reconsider the decision as money becomes available. The board also renewed Superintendent Greg Mann and Business Administrator Adam Robinson's contracts through fiscal year 2028. Mann told KPCW both will get a 4% raise.
Our increases are commensurate to whatever the teachers get.
Mann's total compensation in 2025 was almost $248,000, according to Transparent Utah. Robinson's totaled over $215,000. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, coming up Monday on Mountain Money, we've got a really interesting guest. We've got author Jeff Winters. His book is called The Blind Spot. He talks about how oligarchs increasingly dominate American society, and he argues that this is an interesting phenomenon because it's happening notwithstanding the fact that there are lots of democratic principles in place. Why does this happen? Should be a fascinating conversation. Monday at 9 a.m. on Mountain Money, only here on KPCW. This is KPCW Park City.